1, 2, 3, 4.
You are fighting to stay alive. You are fully into the present, meaning you don't have time to think about being focused on what you are doing. You are struggling so much to pass another window. You don't have time to think about your problems. The only thing that you are concerned, you know deep down at the back of your mind, you need to stay alive. And for that, you need to remain calm and focused.
How can we overcome our fears? How can we challenge ourselves, pushing our physical boundaries to achieve the impossible?
Alain Robert, known as Spider-Man, is a legend in the world of free climbing. For over 30 years, he's scaled some of the world's tallest, most dangerous structures, defying gravity and fear with unmatched skill. In the 80s, a devastating fall left him 60% paralyzed. Yet, against all odds, he rebuilt his body through relentless therapy, returning to peak strength. Today, Alain inspires millions with his powerful speeches and books, urging others to conquer their own limits and chase their dreams without fear.
Alain Robert, welcome back to the Creative Process and One Planet podcast.
Oh, thanks a lot. I am glad, you know, we did something already like maybe 2 years back, and it's always a pleasure for me, you know, having a chit-chat and sharing my experiences with people.
Yeah, and so you've now come out with a new book, Libre et sans attache, Free and Unattached. And your free solo climbs of the world's tallest skyscrapers have been so well documented. I believe it's close to 250 climbs now. And of course, you have a huge following on social media. So many people look up to you. So when did you start climbing?
Oh, yeah, but most of all, I did start climbing 50 years ago. The funny things. I was checking on those AI application, and I found out that I am having 547 million mentions on Google. So it's enormous.
Well, no, it's amazing. And we were talking there before about how your journey is so inspiring because you started climbing. It was pre-internet. You're quite young. And then you graduated from rock climbing and turned to climbing the world's tallest and best known skyscrapers. And two fellow famous climbers wrote the foreword to your new book, Alex Honnold and Alexander Hubert.
If we speak about, you know, one guy who is really famous, this is Alex Honnold, who climbed El Capitan. And actually, I met Alex a couple of times, and he wrote the foreword of my new book. And now, actually, I'm going to read you a few sentences. For example, he's saying, I have nothing but respect for all that Alain has accomplished in his nearly 50 years of climbing. And I know he has experienced incredible things along the way. I am glad that he has taken the time to compile his entire climbing life into one book. Enjoy. And I would like to read you that also. It's very interesting because he's saying in the 90s, Alain free soloed the routes up to B, 513D, when HC, 514D was the hardest grade in the world. That means he was willing to test himself hopeless with his life on the line against routes that were among the hardest in the world. No one else has ever pushed it so close to the edge as a soloist. For comparison, my free solo at El Capitan was 6 grades below my physical limit. And 10 grades below the world standard, a marked difference from Alain's razor thin 1 or 2 grade margin. Actually, 1 grade margin, I had. So it means that, and it's very nice what Alex wrote about me. And I got even Alexander Huber, who is also very famous for free soloing. And he wrote also a foreword for that book. I'm going to read it to you. Free soloing is climbing at its purest form. There is no need to explain challenges as everybody can see the radical nature of free soloing. There is no space for even just one single mistake. For the history of climbing, there are no many protagonists ready to take the challenge. Alain Robert is known as the human spider. Climbing the highest buildings made him famous throughout the world, way beyond the climbing community. But Alain Robert is far more than just a crazy climber who stood the top of most of the most spectacular buildings. Beyond that, he is a pioneer who opened a new level in the art of free soloing. In terms of numbers, he became the first to free solo 8B or 513D. This is not all about numbers. He climbed the random routes free solo like La Nuit du Lézard or Pol Pot in Verdun. It was the constant search of the new horizon which made him crossing the invisible line from the already known into the unknown again and again. As a true pioneer, Alain Robert was and is an inspiration to the whole climbing community as well as for myself, chapeau free solo brother, Alexander Huber. So this is the kind of stuff that actually it is interesting because most people think that I am just this crazy guy climbing buildings, but not even realizing that my background before I started to climb buildings is a lot more amazing than what I have done on buildings.
Yeah, it's just the more visible, I guess, when you disrupt because it's illegal. You didn't have permission.
I know. I totally understood that from the very beginning because I was always followed by tons of journalists. And then I was telling them that I have done amazing thing on rocks. And they said, but it's on rocks. A lot of people have climbed on rocks. And I was saying, yeah, but no, that was a different level, but it's okay, you know, buildings, they are flat, you know. So after like maybe a year, I have even forgotten that one day I was climbing rocks. My entire career was focused on buildings. Like for 22 years, I didn't climb back on rocks. I was back in Verdun 2 years back. And then, well, of course, I was not doing anything really complicated. But the thing is, when you are aging, you are no longer performant. Meaning, when I left Hard Rocks Free Solo in Verdun in 1996, I was at my very best. And I was like, let's say, to compare, my body was like a Ferrari that I was really pushing, you know, until the red zone. But when I came back, I was maybe a Honda Civic. I still pushed it into the red, but of course, what I was doing was a lot more easier than what I was doing in the past. But by comparison, the images are awesome because now there is GoPro, there is drones. So even though I am doing easy routes free solo in Verdun, it looks amazing. And this is exactly what is happening with buildings. All of those new generation of urban climbers, although they, at the moment, they are only climbing average difficult buildings, but their images are awesome. Me, when I was climbing the difficult one that we could compare, you know, if we are discussing about grades on rocks, like maybe 513A, 513B, then which is extremely difficult, but the images are really lousy because there is no possible comparison. It's like comparing Charlie Chaplin and Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. That's the same.
Yeah, and it's amazing. We should say in your book that we hope to be getting in English soon, too. At the moment, it's just in French, that there are amazing images. I've seen the video, and no matter whenever I look at the images of what you've done, it makes me afraid just looking.
Actually, I said that I was planning to climb until I get retirement age in France, which is now 64. So it means that I have to do it again two more times.
Okay, so it's not, I thought it was this last year was going to be your last year. Short retirement.
And also, you know, I am starting a peak and we're going to start shooting in May. So of course, we will be using a lot of guys because it is all about my 50 years free soloing on rocks and on buildings. But there will be also new images. I will be back in Verdun in May and in June. So no, I'm still climbing free solo, you know. Mentally, I'm fine. And physically, I am still training on a regular basis on my climbing wall. And then I am trying to stay, to keep my body as fit as I can.
Okay, so there's still some petrol left in that Honda Civic. Pushing the red zone.
Exactly, you know, for as long as there is an engine, even though it's a small engine, I can still, you know, it's interesting because what I love, because I was at the climbing fair in Paris a few weeks back, and then we had a debate with Alexis Landau, who is one of my friends, who is free soloing Berlings. And there was Catherine d'Estivel, who actually she owns the publishing house. So she's the one who has published my book. And of course, we were debating about free soloing. And yes, I have been pushing the envelope.
I
couldn't go any farther than that.
And I want to say, you said you're still doing your climbing wall. I've seen the pictures of you have these grips all over your ceiling. So do you like climb around your house?
No, usually I start with a coffee after I may do some training, then I take a shower, and then I also like training evening time. What? But like yesterday, I did cut my finger, then for the next 2 days, I won't be training. But it's fine, you know, because my next climb free solo will be in May and in June, so I am having plenty of time.
Yeah, and so it's say at the beginning of your book, Free and Unattached, you did discuss some of those times. I don't even think that they're the most, because you've had serious accidents and you've built yourself back up from coma, from, you know, serious injury to your body. You describe, you know, I think it was your last climb of the Total Tower where the tape on your finger came off just 70 meters from the summit.
I did it one more time in last September. I got a problem even worse. It was raining cats and dogs. It started to get a bit cold. On the day I climbed it, I was free solo with my friend Sébastien Boin, who is an amazing climber, more like climbing with a rope. So it was the first time he was free soloing and climbing at Berlings. I said, okay, Total is kind of an easy Berling, all the more for you. But the problem is at some point I was very high. I was like maybe 150 meters above the ground. I had my legs spread. I was like kind of resting my arms. And there was some mud on the frame. And I didn't see it. I didn't feel it. And the mud was wet. So after I rested like maybe 10 or 15 seconds, I went on to climb the next window, and all of a sudden I slept and I nearly fell, and wow, I was wondering what's happened. Then I rested again like only 2 or 3 seconds because I really wanted to try back, and again this time I took care, and then I slept again, and then I understood, shit. I remember that at the back of my mind, when I was resting the first time, I saw something all brownish, and I thought it was dry leaves on the frame. So I didn't realize that it could be dangerous, slippery, muddy, or whatsoever. I was holding the structure, meaning I was free soloing, so I had no safety. And then I realized that, wow, there is mud underneath my climbing shoes. No wonder I have slept so badly. And then I have tried to clean up my shoes. But when you are free soloing without any safety, it's not that simple cleaning your shoes. I spent 3.5 minutes trying desperately to clean my shoes. Finally, I did manage to clean up maybe 60%. Then I did manage finally to overcome that window, but there was still another like 30 meters. And each time I was passing a window, it was like a new step, because I could feel that everything was still wrong. I knew that my foot was still slipping on the structure. So I was just thinking, okay, now you are really fighting to stay alive. just focus on one window and then the next one. And finally, I reached a platform about 15 meters below the summit. My friend Seb was waiting for me. There was the cops, but I knew the cops, so they didn't say anything. They just let me clean my shoes properly. I did spit. I clean up my shoes and then I finished the ascent easily. Seb, he has never climbed any building. Fortunately for him, he didn't put his climbing shoes on, so then he didn't encounter a particular problem. As on my side, unfortunately, for like 3/4 of the building, everything was fine. I was easily climbing. I was chit-chatting with Seb. Seb, on the contrary, didn't feel really easy because he has never climbed free solo, and then at some point he found it a bit disturbing. Like, if you are free soloing, meaning your life is somehow at stake. So then, because for me it was an easy building, I didn't feel like I was taking any risk. So I was just like chit-chatting until I got this problem.
Because you're so used to being just dependent on yourself. So maybe that's the other thing, is that you have to then, you know, you're chit-chatting, so that internal voice that you're normal, it could distract your focus. Even so, you're so expert at, you know that tower so well, I don't know, 15 times or so, how many times you've climbed it.
I think it was the 16th times I was climbing it. The problem is, fortunately, I had margin. Even though my shoes were still not very clean, I still did manage to climb 30 meters.
Yeah, and you've described these moments as being where you felt between life and death, and time seems suspended. I don't know what that's like. I imagine you're breathing. You have these techniques in these crisis situations, no matter how many times you've done it. How do you maintain your composure? And what are those base thoughts that you run through your mind to bring your mind back to a sense of equilibrium and focus?
Oh, it's quite simple, because first of all, you are fighting to stay alive. You are fully into the present, meaning you don't have time to think about being afraid of whatever, and at the same time being focused on what you are doing. You are struggling so much to pass another window and then to pass again another one. Then you don't have time to think about your problems. The only thing that you are concerned, you know, deep down at the back of your mind, you need to stay alive. And for that, you need to remain calm and focused.
And so fear is ancient. I think that a certain amount of fear serves its purpose. You can have this fearlessness, but you also have to fear and judge situations, right?
The thing is, when you are free soloing, because this is a volunteer, then you need to be able to push your fear aside. And that's why most people, they are confronted with fear, but it's not volunteer. It's like, for example, they are driving and all of the sudden, I don't know, the road may be icy, or somebody is overtaking a car just in front of you. And then all of the sudden, you don't even know what to do. So some people, they are panicking, as other people, they are handling the best they can.
And so how do you learn to redirect your emotion, as you say, to master the fear, or I guess the survival instinct? And you've described yourself as, you know, I fight to the death, you write. I am Spartacus in the arena. So it's this kind of harking back to like an ancient warrior code, the mastery of the self. I think that today, I mean, you say you give these talks to business people, they could be young people, people overcoming cancer, people who need to summon that courage in themselves. But these days, how do we overcome overthinking? You know, it's a modern disease. How do we summoning that warrior spirit when we need it and not burning ourselves out when we don't need it, you know, so that we have stillness amidst all the chaos?
For that, it's kind of simple, because once you have understood that when I was young, I was afraid of everything. I was lacking of self-confidence. I was nearly afraid of my shadow. And then I had a dream. I wanted to become courageous, like my heroes, Zorro, Robin Hood, D'Artagnan. So later on, I realized that, well, I wasn't born at the right era of time. One day I saw a movie inspired by a novel written by Henri Troyat. It's a plane who crashed near the top of Mont Blanc, one of the highest mountains in Europe. And two brothers, mountaineering guide, they climbed the mountain to seek survivors. And then when I saw that, I have been fully inspired. And then I realized I want to become like one of those two guys later on in my life. And then, you know, it's all throughout what I had seen that I had decided that I was going to overcome my fear of everything.
Yeah, and it really is inspiring because to look at you, I mean, the strength just in your little pinky finger, I can't imagine. But you, to look at you, it's not like you have the biggest physique, right? You're kind of small, but you're powerful. And so that's inspiring because I think that inside us, a lot of people don't feel like they're warriors or they don't have it in them. You described like your most important asset is your mind. You said to me, and I often quote it to other people, that you said, my mind is my safety net. And I thought that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, mind is something that you can change it. When I was young, I was afraid of height. I was afraid of falling. I was afraid of dying. But my dream to become courageous was stronger than anything. So I had just to work on myself and assuming that, you know, some people, they think, oh, a lot of people, they prefer to survive than to live their dreams. And yeah. Me, I did choose to live my dreams instead of just being a survivor. So sometimes a lot of people are telling me, you're crazy, you're going to fall, you're going to die. And I said, well, but for dying first, you first must be living. No, because I am seeing a lot of people, they are having a boring life and they are discussing, they are telling me, they are confessing everything and they're telling me, yes, I have no fun in my life. I am doing a shit job because I need to make a living. I am having a family. When I have finished my week, I am tired. Usually, weekend, I am watching TV, I am sleeping. And then I restart all over again, the same shit on Monday. And when you are reaching the age of your retirement, you get a cancer and you die the following year.
Yeah, exactly. Why should people be so afraid of dying if it's at the sacrifice that they're not even living life because they're afraid of dying?
You know, the problem, it comes from our education system, already from our parents. Nobody is teaching us any good things about dying. Here in Bali, yes, I am seeing that dying isn't such a catastrophe because this is Buddhism. They believe in karma, in reincarnation and everything. So meaning they are living more freely with the respect of a potential and a future death, which is the same for everyone. As on my side, now there's like few years that I have kind of understood that consciousness is not material. Consciousness is energy. So it means that when we are dying, it's only our physical body who is dead, but our consciousness is still existing. And then why should we be so afraid of that? It's just a natural process.
Yeah. It's the way of all things. And in fact, you quote Todai from the Upanishads, you are the expression of your deepest desire. As is your desire, so is your will. As is your will, so are your actions. As are your actions, so will be your destiny. So it's all, we're all one, right?
That's
we can't
why,
fear
I,
if we're
you
all
know,
one.
I am trying nowadays to help people with that skill because I have understood that it was far beyond than just being a guy who is climbing and potentially taking a risk. But there is a lot more than that. It is about inspiring people to achieve something, not just being frustrated and thinking that when it's time to die, because there is one day you stop and then life, at least life like we are living on Earth, is over. And then I always felt that I don't want to live full of regrets and thinking that I didn't dare that much. There was plenty of things that I wanted to live, but I just didn't do it. because I was far too busy making money. I was far too busy following the herd of the society. The problem is I have kind of understood the system now very well, you know, capitalism. It's like about creating in the mind of people needs. So people, they are chasing dreams, but their dreams is a lot on acquiring a set. We don't need to be that rich for having a nice life and having a lot of times that you can be using for yourself, for your family, for your friends, for whoever, and not just like living behind a computer or behind a machine. And
exactly. And I think that that's the true meaning, the full meaning of free and unattached, or your other book, With Bare Hands, that we can actually go in. These are not only journeys outwards or scaling cliffs or buildings. It's an inner journey where we can be free and unattached from our possessions, which end up possessing us. We can be free to pursue our dreams. We can even free ourselves from desires as well. And just acceptance, finding the beauty within.
If you remember 2008, the prime crisis in the US, you know, anyone, even the people, they were nearly penniless, they could buy a house. And then after like a year, the bank was, where is the money? Then they were taking back the house and prices on the housing was going up and up and up. Then that was a good business. But until one day, there was too much houses and the demand was much lower than the number of houses, and all of that so-called American dream collapsed and it became an international crisis.
Exactly. And that was a huge crime. We've actually had again on our show Richard D. Wolff, who is an economist, discussing the same thing. And of course, you're living in Asia. You know, there's different economic models within Asia. Everyone, like in the West, particularly in America, they're so afraid of China, but they're getting better at capitalism than even America.
You are right, because, you know, we are talking about, you know, the so-called democracy, but there isn't any more democracy. You know, the US president, they are deciding on their own. They are not consulting anyone. They are deciding, like Trump the other day said, okay, Palestine is now for, it's US, it's our land, like that. You know, overnight, Palestine is our territory. Mm-hmm. We are going to take Greenland. We are going to take the Panama Canal. We are going to get as a 51st state, Canada, you know. And, you know, I have realized that Trump is demolishing the economy, you know. If he's really putting all of those tariffs on goods, it's going to destroy the economy in the whole world, including in the U.S. Because, you know, a good example, there is those cars made in China. They are the best in the world. They cost $30,000. So, of course, Tesla, they are not very competitive against it. But then they are putting 100% tariffs on the cars made in China. So people will be buying a U.S. car, Tesla, instead of buying a much better car from China. So it is destroying everything, because at the end of the day, they could have got a Chinese car for $30,000 and they are buying a Tesla $55,000. So it's nearly the double.
Yeah. And I think that, although I didn't want to say too much on the capitalism and socialism, but I think that when we see the success of China and what they've done, how they've turned around, brought millions of people out of poverty, and the growth that they've had for over like 30 years dwarfs anything that America ever did, or in the industrialized nations. And so it kind of puts them to shame. And that's capitalism woven together with a socialist public policies, government controlled, and capitalism. So I think it's a model. And so, you know, France is a socialist country. I'm not against socialism. I think that it has a real place. And so we're learning. And that's part of, like, to go back to your book, Free and Unattached, you know, that's a collaborative spirit of socialism that we have to retain. You know, capitalism, survival of the fittest. And if you're not a billionaire, there's no safety net for you. So it's
exactly.
Just not. It's terrible.
You know, very often, you know, because there is people criticizing me because of my social medias, but I'm telling them, I also need to make a living. And actually, I make a living also with my social medias. So you are criticizing me. You are living in France. The social system is one of the best in the world. You are having medical healthcare system for free. The government is helping you to pay for your rental. They're helping you. They are giving you for your kids until they are reaching the age of 8. They are paying for the school. They are paying for everything. Here in Bali, there is nothing. I did redo my life. I am married with an Indonesian woman. We are having a child. He's 10 years old. He speaks English. He speaks Indonesian, but he goes to an international school. And I need to pay for everything.
And I
am nearly 63. So that's why I don't really understand people, why they are criticizing me. They don't even know who I am. They don't even know what I do. They don't even know all of the sacrifices I have done all along my life. I could have been living with my handicap that is estimated at 66% disability, but either I was climbing or I was going to get a lifelong pension. Then I have decided, I said to the doctor, it's okay, I am done, I am young, I'm going to climb back, and I forget about the pension.
We should have to say there is you did have a serious fall. This was from you were climbing a cliff, free soloing, and you were in a coma, I think, for a month.
And it was year 1982. I was only a good French climber. Then I fell. So that was the end of my dream. I was in a coma, destroyed. I exploded my wrist, my fingers. After the coma, my surgeon, he said, look, if I had to describe your bones, your joints, they are both. They are scrambled eggs. So he said, there is nothing I can do. Now we are still friends. Today, me, because we did a new documentary share only in French at the moment, but he wrote an email that is amazing. And he said that because he met the guy who did the film, and he said, unfortunately, I did forget to speak that all along my career, I have been inspired by you because you did show me and you did show to the whole world that actually the human body is capable to do amazing things that we are not learning in the bench in the university.
With his miraculous recovery and an injury which, as he knows, even his doctor seemed discouraged by, Alain Robert has shown through his work something which is so powerful as to inspire me, Jaden Van of Michigan State University, and other college students around the world. This is that, yes, the human body, the human mind can overcome seemingly unconquerable feats, but this comes at a cost. A willingness to be so invested and committed to one's work that nothing which attempts to block you from reaching that goal is able to succeed. In my psychology studies, I have faced many comments about the reputable nature of the field. For a long time, people have debated about whether this field is worthy of being held to the same level as the other sciences. This controversy stems largely from the fact that psychology in itself is majorly defined and limited by the unknown. Alain's recollection of the trials he was forced to surpass to reach this current point in his career echo the truth that success is not found by succumbing to doubt, but by embracing the unknown with courageous ferocity. In an area often disregarded for its complex nature, psychology requires that we push back against the boundaries of skepticism, much like Alain does through his climbing. With rapid technological advancements like AI, we are no longer bound by these past limitations. It's through welcoming this uncertainty and harnessing these resources that we can transform the seemingly impossible into a future of endless possibility. And now, back to the interview.
Exactly, because medicine is all about, repair. It doesn't teach us about what the mind can do, what the body can regenerate, like properly. We can regenerate.
Exactly. Our body is having an immune system that is fighting against everything. You know, every day, now I am analyzing a lot more than when I was young. But when I cut my finger, I know that, okay, it's a matter of 2 days. And in 2 days, it's going to be healed. If you are breaking your car or your computer, not going to fix it just like that.
And so how do you, I mean, obviously this is 50 years of climbing, these years of experience, nothing replaces that experience. You obviously have the muscle memory. You have the instincts that you've developed. You have an intuitive intelligence where you might be able to even almost climb some things blindly, just, you know, your sense of touch, your sense of just all, it's a whole sense of the way you can feel wind and be able to read the weather or, you know, anticipate. You're living in the moment. At the same time, so it's spontaneous and improvised, but you're also having to see around the corner to think, oh, this could happen. So all these calculations, there's something scientific, mathematical going on too, because you're planning, but you're very present. So how did you build that intuitive intelligence? I mean, in a way that, you know, the average person can kind of understand, because it's, we're not going to be Alain Robert. Okay, listener, you have to be realistic. You're not going to be Alain Robert, but here's some things you can take away from
his... That was the conclusion of Gerard Well, the surgeon, in his email I received this morning. Is like, unfortunately, not everyone can be an Robert. But let's say that it is purely out of willingness and willpower. You know, after the terrible fall in 1982, when I was really condemned to never climb again, I guess I have built something into myself that it's even difficult to describe. It's like I was young, I was 19 years old, and I was not going to give up so easily in my dream. You know, already becoming a climber was already kind of a huge victory. All of the sudden, I was only 19 and my life was broken, over, buried. Then I have decided, no, it's not going to be like that. I'm going to stop listening to doctors and surgeons since they are against me. Everybody was against me. Everybody was telling me, you're not going to climb back. My dad was telling me, you're not going to climb back. Everybody was telling me, you're not going to climb back.
Yeah, so that's what society does with all of our rules. Obviously, we need some rules in society, but everyone is telling you, I think from the time you're born, and I know it's very much the case in France, there's a kind of protocol. When you're as a young man, you're just being told, this is the way society is. It's very bourgeois. And then we have our own internal fear. So we internalize what we've been told. But ideally, as children, we're kind of wild. If you look at a child, when they're young, they are little monkeys. They're wild. And then we teach all these layers.
You are right. When you are a lot younger, normally there's a lot of things your brain does not understand. But, you know, all along our life, through our education, when we are going to school and everything, and also our friends, meaning pretty much everyone is going the same way, like a herd. And because if you look at it, it is ideal for the society. They don't want guys like me who are completely eccentric. How you can make money with a guy like me? There is no way to make money. If you want to have a growing economy, you need to have a lot of sheep in your herds. Individual people, they are not good for the society.
Well, that's exactly part of the problem in education. One size doesn't fit all, as everyone has different levels of skills and capabilities. Regrettably, individual thinking and independent mindsets are viewed as antisocial, and the system is built to create a collective hive kind of mindset where everyone goes along to get along. And it's a sad thing to lose your real sense of self in order to fit in. And for me, I think that's why your journey is an excellent example of being who you are regardless and challenging yourself. But also on top of that, being prepared to risk your life time and time again is the kind of courage many people wish they had within themselves. You know, I'm not physically courageous like you. Maybe I have a certain different kind of courage, but I do watch these nature documentaries. I was watching ones on leopards the other night, and I find it just amazing. I don't know if you watch them or you just like go out and observe animals, but you know, the dexterity, the communication,
no,
in silence.
I love, you know, I am having a cat. I love watching my cat because he can do stuff that I am amazed. He also, we are having quite a lot of monkeys. And monkeys, they are amazing. And wow, if I could get only 5% of their strength, what I would be able to do. Just like how the muscle of a monkey that can be so powerful by comparison of a human muscle. So that's kind of insane.
No, it is amazing. And I'm really tired of hearing, you know, how they say we dominate, we're smart, we have these big brains. And they always kind of, if there's an insult about, oh, well, non-human animals have small brains or whatever. But they, some of them have small brains, but they also think with their whole body. So they're,
oh,
it's
yeah,
not,
me
we
too,
should
too,
think with our whole body. Right?
To be honest, I think the worst species in the world is the human one. We are the one who are destroying everything. Animals, they are not like that. They are not that cruel. They are fighting just to eat for the day and maybe the next day. And that's it. They don't need to kill. They are not greedy. They don't need to acquire A, B, C, D, E, F, G. No, they are totally different. So for me, when I'm opening my eyes, I go in my garden. I am surrounded by tropical plants, animals, and I am just like marveling, watching the sun rising, watching the sun going down, sunset, dusk. I am just like amazed how fantastic is our world, our surrounding. But the problem, people do not feel concerned any longer because maybe their lifestyle is very different than mine, and maybe they are not having that much interest because this is not what the society is saying. Telling us. We are bombarded by advertising every day, everywhere, even on the internet. It's sometimes miserable to skip it. You know, they are becoming more and more clever. Before they were putting skip at this level, but now they put it down. So sometimes for a while you are searching, how can I skip it? Because we are, you know, the system is very simple. It is brainwashing the society. Having the people thinking the same way.
If we're like the mice in the maze, the experiment is that we're the guinea pigs.
No. The cat is coming.
Oh, okay.
This is Oliver.
Hello, Oliver. Oh, beauty. Hello. I was just wanting to say with the technology is that we've become guinea pigs. We didn't test it on animals. We test it on ourselves. You know, just saying on that point of non-human animals, I mean, I don't know what your mind is when you're climbing or whether it's cliffs or buildings and you have all this danger around you. How do you erase the fear of death from your thinking?
What is amazing, it's nice because when you are facing a potential death situation, you are humble. Most people sometimes they can be arrogant when they are just on the soil, but there is this immensity all around you. You know that if you are not good, you're dead. So it's just a matter of a second and you are done. So, you know, you need to remain strong in your mind. And at the meantime, you get to be a realist that actually gravity is also for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's something so few of us have ever been tested that way. I mean, I think about, obviously, there's kind of military or athletic endeavors usually, but they're collective, like SEAL Team 6 or whatever. But they have a whole entourage of people, family they can depend on. The difference is with you, you're like alone. You're like that lone hunter. You know, it's all or nothing. It's life or death. There's zero margin of error.
It's definitely amazing as a feeling. I know it's hard to describe sometimes. I don't want also to encourage people to do the same. Of course not. But we were discussing during our debate with Alexis and Catherine. We came to the conclusion that actually normal people who are not trained physically and mentally, they cannot do it. As simple as that. Me, you know, sometimes people are telling me, and if somebody is trying to do the same thing as you do, and I said, well, it's not going to take off. As simple as that.
No, of course not. And because it's easy, quick gratification nowadays, people don't even want to leave their apartment. You know, they want to deliver everything to their door. So I don't think they will, but you give them something to dream about. When you look back at your whole career, your whole journey of climbs, what are some of those that are like most meaningful for you, that are you most proud of? I don't know if you can
Maybe on rocks, I would say climbing Pol Pot in Verdun because I really pushed the envelope. I was at 50-50, meaning I had no margin. I knew that deep down, my mind knew that I was going to make it, but I couldn't get sure actually. Meaning if I have had to explain mathematically, it was not possible. It was just an act of faith. So meaning I know it seems to be a little bit real calculating blankly that what you will be doing today can kill you. And you're only doing it because you're having faith in yourself. But you can't get sure that it's going to work because this is not something that you can get sure because of your muscles. You know, there is different type of routes. There is some, we are calling it random. Random, it means random. It's like Russian roulette. It's like playing poker. So the kind of routes I was free soloing end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, most of the time they were nowadays. There is people, they did harder things, free solo, but they are not random. They are very overhanging. And then you are ruling by your muscle strength. So it's physical. So training your body physically, it is something you can acquire. Then if you are physically fit doing what you are planning to do, then it's fine. It's going to work. It's as simple as that.
It's the unknown aspect of
this is what Alex Honnold was explaining, that so far he's the only person he's knowing that who has been climbing nearly at the same level with a rope and without a rope.
Wow. It must be very gratifying because you've really inspired a generation of climbers. Maybe it's going good to go into a second generation because you've been climbing 50 years. So it must be like going into two, or at least there's going to be some others starting a second generation you've inspired. I mean, we actually brought on the last show. It was a young climber. I don't think she does free solo now, but it was very inspiring for her to get the chance to speak with you. But those things that you just had to learn. And it's amazing. It's funny because most people know you for the skyscrapers, which for you, you said is like your holiday almost. The
Pretty
real.
Although I got problems a few times, but okay, sometimes when I am comparing my hardest buildings like Framatome or the Sears Tower with Total, I would say Total is a trekking. Except that nowadays, filming trekking with the new cameras, drones, and everything, it's insane. When I climbed the Sears and I climbed Framatome, there was a lousy cameras at the bottom. There was no GoPros, no drones, no nothing. Then the images, they are lousy.
And I want to ask as well, because even since we last spoke, everything that you do is basically with your bare hands. There's no ropes, obviously. There's no technology. So everything that you do is essentially, it's like you could do the same thing 100 years ago, except the buildings weren't around. Now we're going into this new frontier with the AI, with the dominance of technology. It's even detaching us more and more from reality, our real world. It's limiting our imagination.
You're absolutely right, because all of those new technologies, they're having a wide angle, they are changing the dimension of your surrounding. I am seeing it all the more when I'm seeing guys doing parkour. They are jumping from one roof to the next, but it looks like they are jumping 10 meters away, although there is only 1.5 meter. But, you know, it's all bullshit, like Mission Impossible. And the problem, this is what people now they're having in their mind. They don't even realize that actually a lot of things are bullshit technologies.
So I'm just wondering what your reflections are. You have a young child, 10 years old, you know. We were talking about this. You think obviously with your whole body, but intelligence with AI, with all our dependence on our technology, has become disembodied. How do you protect? I mean, what do you tell your child? And then you have older children. You've seen that. What are your concerns? How do you feel we come back to who we really are? And that kind of connection, instead of endless distraction, numbing, people don't even want to use their imagination. They say, AI, write me a story.
This is our world is constantly changing, and it's difficult to be rebellious, to be against the system. Of course, the more I am moving forward and the more I am realizing that it's complicated. You know, my kids are playing video games. I've never played with video games. I hate it. I don't need it. I don't need to watch TV. I watch movies. I watch movies and I am watching a podcast on independent media. That's it. That's all I do. I'm trying, you know, every day I'm just trying to know a little bit what is happening all around the world. I love listening to Jeffrey Sachs, John Mearsheimer.
He's been on our show a few times. Our friend
Jeffrey. That's the kind of people I am listening.
I want to say, because talking about going against the grain, some of your climbs, like you did a climb in support of peace in Israel-Palestine. So it just reminded me when you mentioned Jeffrey Sachs. That was a bit controversial because you spoke about it. So I really love that you also don't just put your life on the line. You also take the risk of like speaking up for those things that you believe in. And that takes another kind of courage.
I climbed against the humanitarian passport. It's just like I had to go to France. But in France, normally through the constitution, you are not obliged to get vaccinated. But all of a sudden, they found a trick to get you obliged. Oh, yeah, you are not obliged. But you cannot take the plane anymore. You cannot take the bus. You cannot take the train. You cannot go to the restaurant. You can't do anything anymore.
There was a lot of limitations on that. Well, I know because you're so fit. I mean, I was of two minds of it because some people who aren't fit are at risk. But I'm glad that you do use your platform and your climbs as a way to speak out, because that's, you know, symbolic. It's saying, look, you know, we can actually fight for what we believe in. Look, the impossible can happen. And it's really slow in those areas, but we can face our fears. So nothing is impossible. I want to thank you, Alain Robert, for showing us that we can follow our dreams and rise above our fears, that it is possible to do extraordinary things. You know, if you have the passion and conviction, the impossible is achievable. Just by being free and unattached, we can find happiness within. Believe in yourself, look danger in the face. We can push our limits and achieve our dreams. Thank you, Alain, for adding your voice to the Creative Process and One Planet podcast.
Oh, that was a real pleasure. You know, I have had a lot of fun.
Well, I think for most people, remember your ABCs is always be careful. I think for you, it's always be courageous. Thank you, Alain. The Creative Process podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. This interview was conducted by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students.
Associate interview producer on this episode were Sophie Garnier and Jaden Van. The Creative Process is produced by Mia Funk. Additional production support by Katie Foster. Wintertime was composed by Nicholas Anadolis and performed by the Athenian Trio. We hope you have enjoyed listening to this podcast. If you'd like to get involved with our creative community exhibitions, podcasts, or submit your creative works for review, just drop us a line at team@creativeprocess.info. Thanks for listening.